You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I am your host, James Edwards, this Saturday evening, October the 30th, along with Keith Alexander the Great, as always, or as most always, here on Halloween Eve. And we have got
real-life horror show going on.
That's right. That music is appropriate, not just because it's the night before Halloween, but also because of a very big trial that some of our friends and colleagues are facing in Charlottesville. It is now officially underway after 4 years. It's underway, so much to your right to a speedy trial, but the Sines versus Kessler trial began in Charlottesville on Monday, and right on cue, the regime media started cranking out its propaganda in order to remind the jurors of the decision that they're going to be pressured to make in spite of all the facts and all the evidence that the defense attorneys, the various defense attorneys, are going to be presenting in that courtroom. So yours truly and I will be providing commentary on the coverage thus far in the media, and some insights from inside the courtroom itself. That's what we're going to be doing over the course of the first 2 hours of tonight's show. Just me, just Keith, together, talking about the Charlottesville trial on this, our first show since our 17-year anniversary. And before we get to the heart of tonight's broadcast, Keith, I want to thank you, my friend. You weren't with us last week. You had another engagement when we celebrated 17 years on the air, 17 years that were made possible by God's grace, the fact that Jesus has delayed his coming so long that we could get to 17 years on the air. Of course, all of our friends and supporters, and not the least to mention, Keith, you and all the work and talent you provided this show for now more than a decade and a half. So 17 years. You want to give us a 60-second reflection on what 17 years means to you, my friend?
Well, it's been nonstop. I tell you, it's just, you know, we never run out of material because the left never lets us down. They've always got a new indignity or a new outrage almost on a daily basis, not much less a weekly basis. For example, the Biden administration is now offering $450,000 a head for illegal immigrants to come to the country. I couldn't believe that when I read it. I said, this is fantasy land. But, you know, the truth is stranger than fiction in today's America, and we've been here to chronicle it, and I'm so glad that we've been able to do that, to have that opportunity. But, you know, this is, you know, somebody said one time in a Sunday school class I was in that if God doesn't judge America, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology. And, you know, the more that I see, the more that rings true with me. It's, you know, you said that Jesus has postponed his coming. I don't know how much longer that postponement can happen at the pace of warp speed leftist change that we're getting. I mean, things that before would have sounded like somebody's fevered fantasy are now becoming reality in America.
Well, it's a waking nightmare, I think, for the people on trial in Charlottesville. Over the course of these first 2 hours tonight, folks, we're going to break it down for you, okay, to the best of our ability. And I have listened to the entire proceedings, and there's a way that you can do that, too, if you're interested. We'll give you all that information tonight. I hope what we're able to share with you will shed a little light and illuminate you to what's taking place thus far. And with that being said, let's just get down to it. So If you go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, we reposted an article written by Brad Griffin at Occidental Dissent making mention of the fact that this trial in Charlottesville is underway. If you scroll to the bottom of that article, you'll find a telephone number. I'll give it to you in a minute, but so get pen and paper ready. But there's a telephone number there. You dial in, and you put in an access code, and you can listen to the trial as if you were in the courtroom. If they're not in session, you're going to hear dead air. But if they are, you will hear everything. And you don't have to sign up. You don't have to give them your name. It's completely anonymous. And it's been a wonderful resource to inform what's going on for this, the purposes of this broadcast tonight. And that's why we have no guests. We're going to take our time with this and really methodically work through what's been happening. My wife, though, was listening to it as well with me a couple of days ago, and she gave this birthday party analogy. And she said, you know what this sounds like is that if we had reserved a park for our children to have a birthday party at, and while we were having this party, other people who weren't invited to the party came in and started visiting violence upon us, and then us getting blamed for the violence. I said, bingo, you got it. That is exactly what this is like on a much larger and certainly more important scale. But let's remember that Jason Kessler, who is the lead defendant in this civil trial, had a permit that was upheld by a judge just the night before the events of August 12, 2017. Now, you could say, constitutionally speaking, perhaps he didn't need a permit at all. The First Amendment gives you the right to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, especially on public property, which is what Lee Park was. And but nevertheless, he had a permit that was required by the city for any such demonstration or rally or event, and he went through all of the proper procedures. But you say, well, why, James, do we take your word for it? Why is it like if we busted up your kid's birthday party? How do we know you're telling the truth about who caused the violence? That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. Don't take my word for it, because I will tell you, I am biased. I am firmly in the camp of the defendants. I stand with the defendants, and I will not mince words about that. But don't take my word for it. Take the word of the investigator that was hired by the city of Charlottesville itself to compile an official investigative report that would make mention of the facts of this case to inform the city. It was called the Heafy Report. Timothy Heafy was the investigator hired by Charlottesville. He was certainly not a right-winger or whatever you want to call the people that were there. He was an independent investigator hired by the city. And his findings were that the initial violence, let me repeat, the initial violence came from the leftists. The initial violence came from those who were not invited to be there that day, who were not a part of the group that had the permit to be there that day. That is the official finding of the Heafy Report. I mean, obviously, it's many, many, many pages. It goes on in quite lavish detail about the events of that day. But that is something that people need to be remembered. Paul Gottfried wrote an article about it just this week at Chronicles, for Chronicles magazine. Paul Gottfried, good friend of ours. Anyway, so that's what we need to remember as we head into this civil case. Jury selection started on Monday. I'll take you there. We're going to rewind the tape to Monday and go day after day as we continue to share with you what's happened in these proceedings thus far. Stay tuned. It'll be blow by blow.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. So I said last week, and we're covering the Charlottesville trial, which is now a week into it, is what I'm stabbing at here. I said last week, and it didn't take Nostradamus to be able to see this, but when Sam Dixon was on as part of our 17th anniversary celebration last week, I said, Sam, this is the calm before the storm. This was last Saturday. I said, come Monday, Charlottesville is going to be the biggest political story in the country again, and of course, right on cue, it most certainly was. And these are some of the headlines that I collected, Keith, and there's no shortage of them. Here's one, for instance, from the Washington Post. White supremacists return to Charlottesville, but this time they're on trial. And this is the classic, what do you call a white man who isn't ashamed of who he is and wants to defend his heroes? A white supremacist. What do you call a black man who does the same thing? A black man. Charlottesville Nazis are headed to court.
A proud black man at that.
Another one, how to select an impartial jury when white supremacists are on trial. So these are just, you get the idea. So these are the headlines. And this, by the way, is why Fox News and respectable conservatives aren't worthy of your support. Where's the defense of Tucker Carlson? On behalf of the defendants here, and what is a show trial, and make no mistake about it, a show trial that would make Comrade Stalin blush is what we have here. But the stakes are very, very high. Even though this is a civil and not a criminal trial, you could have judgments rendered against these people that will have generational ramifications. I think in some ways prison time would actually be better. Nevertheless, this is how the media is covering it, and this is not a sequestered jury. I told you I'm going to get to the jury trial that the selection began on Monday. It ran for 2 days. I'll tell you all about that. But this jury is not sequestered, Keith, and even though the judge has instructed them not to talk about the case with anyone who's not on the jury, not to read or watch anything about it, I mean, I think we know that that's probably fanciful to believe that they wouldn't do that or be able to do that even. But your reaction very quickly to the media that we've seen. Obviously, the full court press is on to lead these jurors in the direction, very much like Chauvin, I might add, to deliver the verdict and the punishment that the media wants to see meted out.
Well, I think you're right. I think that whatever the left wants, the left will get. And the left obviously does not want a sequestered jury because they want the opportunity to get to the jurors and influence their decision. They want them to feel pressured like the jurors in the Derek Chauvin trial admittedly felt pressured to deliver the verdict that the left wants, because if they don't, they may lose jobs, they may have violence visited upon them or their family, things like that. What I would ask people to do is to remember that we are supposed to have a grand tradition in America of freedom of speech, of peaceful assembly to protest the government and the government's actions. And those things are not in evidence at all when right-wing people try to have the same rights that the left-wingers had, for example, in the Civil Rights Movement. Imagine what would have happened in the Civil Rights Movement if Martin Luther King, John Lewis, people like that, were brought to trial, both criminally and civilly, for exercising their constitutional right of freedom of assembly and freedom of protest, things like that. If they were being hounded with great expense and they didn't have Jewish power and influence behind them making sure that all of their expenses were paid, that they had the best lawyers. See, the right doesn't have a school bus load of National Lawyer Guild lawyers or NAACP Legal Defense Fund lawyers. They have to go out and find their own representation. This is why this fable that we have, this fairy tale about the Civil Rights Movement, is being shown to be exactly what it was, a fairy tale. None of this would happen or did happen the way that we have been led to believe. It wasn't black people just getting together, linking arms, swinging back and forth, singing spirituals, and the walls came tumbling down. Now you see with Charlottesville and now also the January 6th so-called insurrection, just how much you put yourself in jeopardy if you try to exercise your constitutional rights of peaceful assembly and protest.
Okay, and so with that being said, let's get down to the jury selection, which began on Monday. And I would first preface what I'm about to say by telling you that this is not a Charlottesville City Court. This is a federal court, and it's the Western District of Virginia Federal Court, which is not just Charlottesville, and it doesn't include at all Northern Virginia. This is the Western District of Virginia is blood red state country. Of course, it's the population of Northern Virginia that sinks Virginia in the presidential elections. Other than that, you've got good, rural, hardy, Southern-type people in the Western District, in the western part of the state of Virginia, good people. And that is the area from which the jury is being selected.
It's going to be representative. That's one of the things that would make us feel hopeful about this result. See, Charlottesville is an outlier. It is not like the rest of Western Virginia.
And so Jason Kessler, who is, again, the lead defendant in this case, the case is technically Sines et al. Versus Kessler et al., and we're going to mention all 24 of the different defendants and defendant groups in a moment, and there are many plaintiffs as well. So during the jury selection process, Jason Kessler is live tweeting from the courtroom, and here's just a couple of examples. One juror, and I'm reading Jason's report here right now, or his tweet, one juror remembers being the victim of anti-white racist violence in high school. The plaintiff's attorneys jumped on this and started interrogating him about whether he is or isn't a white supremacist. So when asked questions by the attorneys in the jury selection process, prospective jurors said he had been the victim of black-on-white violence. They immediately asked him, well, what are you, a white supremacist? So this is it. But there's more, Keith. There's more.
I guarantee you he was dropped from the jury pool.
But this is another good thing, just as a quick aside. This is something that has to be remembered, And Jason Kessler points this out. The plaintiffs in signs are about to subject America to an epic wine fest about hate speech. But hate speech is free speech. In the era of cancel culture, America needs to reaffirm its commitment to robust, even extremely offensive political speech. If you don't have that, if the freedom of speech doesn't cover controversial or unpopular speech, what good is it? What good is it if it only covers speech that everybody agrees with?
Well, this whole idea of hate speech is a new development. This is not something that you read about when you read Thomas Jefferson or James Madison or even Abraham Lincoln or even Woodrow Wilson and people like that. This is a new development, and it really shows you how liberalism has morphed so radically over the past 50 years.
Here's a couple of other nuggets or pearls from the jury selection process. One juror, when asked about why he isn't worried about anti-Semitism, or one prospective juror stated, "I just don't believe that we have that problem," quote unquote. Another says that he has a brother, a police officer, and blamed critical errors by the Charlottesville Police Department for the violence in Charlottesville that day, but said that he could put aside previous bias and judge the case fairly. Another juror said, in today's political climate, the left is the side that's unhinged. And that he also, and I heard this from a couple of different jurors, potential jurors, he fears violence from plaintiffs' supporters and Antifa and Black Lives Matter if he acquits the defendants. That's something I want you to think about while we take this next break. And then we'll go back to the jury
selection
process.
I really wonder how many
process.
Of those people that you named actually wound up on the jury.
We'll talk about that in just a moment.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Alec Baldwin addressing the shooting on the set of his movie Rust for the very first time, saying on Saturday afternoon,
"You know, there are incidental accidents on film sets from time to time, but nothing like this. This is a one in a trillion episode."
Baldwin speaking to paparazzi in Vermont there, Baldwin saying he cannot make any comments on the actual shooting, which killed cinematographer Helena Hutchins and injured director Joel Souza, but explained that's only because of the ongoing investigation. World leaders of the 20 largest economies endorsing a global minimum tax aimed at stopping big business from hiding profits in offshore entities. President Biden at that G20 summit. Next up, before he heads back to the United States, he'll attend a global climate summit. And this is USA Radio News.
Awesome and amazing day. Hey, friends, it's John and Chelsea Jubilee, and here's my beautiful wife, Chelsea.
Hi, women. I have a message just for you today. Every single day, we have women that come to us in pain. Not physically, even though, yes, that is too, but in pain from suffering of hopelessness because they have tried every single thing to lose weight, and they can't.
And they can't year after year after year, and they give up. They give up hope. They're desperate. They're in a dark place. But we have a light of truth. Science is a search for the truth that is known. In our breakthrough science of intercellular hydration, ladies, you will lose 15 to 20 pounds of solid fat every 4 weeks. Go log on to our website. Look at the testimonials of real women just like you who were hopeless, but this changed their life.
Check us out at energizedhealth.com. That's energizedhealth.com.
An investigation is underway after an Amtrak crash left 3 people dead and 1 seriously injured in South Carolina. Carolina, I should say. The North Charleston Fire Department saying that Amtrak train slammed into a vehicle about 2:30 a.m. on Saturday. 4 people found near the heavily damaged vehicle. 3 were pronounced dead at the scene, and paramedics treated that lone survivor who was taken to a hospital. Officials say the train was carrying about 500 passengers. None of them were hurt. Vice President Kamala Harris rolling up her sleeve on Saturday for a COVID booster shot. She got the Moderna booster in D.C., and so far the CDC has approved booster shots for folks over 65, those with pre-existing conditions, and those who work at jobs with a high risk of exposure. The White House confirming that Harris's job duties of frequent travel and meeting with many people made her also eligible for that booster. And this is USA Radio News.
I just moved in my new house today. Moving was hard, but I got squared away. Bell started ringing and chains rattled loud. I knew I'd moved in a haunted house. Still I made up in my mind to stay. Nothing was gonna drive me away. When I seen something that give me the creep. Had one big eye and a two big feet. I stood right still and I did the freeze. He did the stroll right up to me. Made a noise with his feet that sound like a drum. Say you'll be here when the morning comes. Say yes, I'll be here when the morning comes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, if you're wondering about the music selection tonight, you shouldn't. It's the night before Halloween, and we're getting into the spirit of this holiday with rich European traditions. Keith?
That's my personal favorite. That's a Memphis produced piece of music at High Records, the same recording studio that recorded Ann Peebles, Al Green, Willie Mitchell, people like that back in the soul time. Ray Harris was the producer of that particular song from Mantachie, Mississippi. And I have had a personal conversation with Sam the Sham, who told me he wrote it, went to High Records, did a demo, and the next thing he knows, he's turning on the radio in his car and hears Gene Simmons singing his song. So I'm sure
injustice,
a lot of that went
on. A lot of injustice. It was injustice in the 60s for Sam the Sham. We hope that our friends...
But it pales in comparison to what we have to experience today in Charlottesville.
So back to jury selection. And again, just a couple of more. Here's one who says that the mainstream media is sympathetic to the plaintiff's side of view, quote unquote, that he discounts media coverage because it's biased. Another juror asked why she is concerned about racism towards whites, and she responded, it's just everything that's going on with the statues. So I don't want to paint a picture that's not accurate. The people who ultimately ended up on the jury, this jury of 12, are very ideologically and racially diverse, of course. But the fact that there were that many in the original pool that spoke the truth and had these common sense observations, I think has to be somewhat encouraging if you're trying to read tea leaves or whatever. But of course, to the yin, there is the yang, and there were people on there that say, hey, these guys are white supremacists, these guys are Nazis, I can't be a fair and impartial juror because I hate these people or I hate what they stand for, you know, things to that effect. But it's interesting, though, Keith, that the plaintiff's attorneys ran out of their strikes for the jurors well in advance of the defense running out of their strikes, just to give you an idea. But
you have two types of strikes in a jury trial. You have strikes for cause, and there's no limit to those. And you have preemptive strikes, which you have a limited number of, where you don't really have to have a strong reason. You can just, as a lawyer for either the defense or the plaintiff, go with your gut and say, I don't think this person is going to be fair to my client, and get them off. Well, in a place like Charlottesville, I think you're going to find many more left-wingers than you are right-wingers. And as a result, I would imagine that most of the people that we've just heard comments from did not wind up on that jury. I hope I'm wrong, but my gut tells me I'm right.
Here's another couple of comments. Potential juror, I'm reading from Jason Kessler's at the Mad Dimension, by the way, on Twitter. Potential juror elaborates on his fears of violent repercussions. This is the second time we've heard this. I would fear someone showing up at my residence. Another one went off, actually, on anti-white hatred in society, saying there is more hatred towards whites than Jews, blacks, and other groups. You see it everywhere you look, on every channel. So, yes, all it takes, though, this is something that people need to remember, it only takes one. Just like in a criminal trial, in a civil trial, you have to have unanimity on the verdict or on the judgments. Well, now, you know a lot more about me than this because you are an attorney, Keith, so tell me what I'm missing, tell me where I'm right, where I'm wrong.
Well, you're right. That was the standard rule that used to apply throughout the United States. since I started practicing law, let's say over the past 45 years or so, there have been changes. There are some cases, there are some jurisdictions where criminal cases still require a unanimous 12-person jury, and others don't. But most of the time, you have a 12-person jury in a criminal case, in a civil case. Some jurisdictions have gone to less than unanimity, like 9 out of 12 or whatnot. There are other courts that have a jury of 6 rather than 12. There's all sorts of changes, but my understanding is that Charlottesville, Virginia, still requires a unanimous jury verdict of 12 jurors.
And we're going to get into that more in the second hour, okay? But I will tell you this. I know that at least one of the jurors who made the comments that we were just reading did get ultimately selected to be on that jury. So that could be the one that it comes down to. We're going to talk more about that in the next hour. But back to this phase of where we're at, I have to remind you again that I think that the First Amendment itself is on trial here. I think in many ways this trial is the biggest trial in the last 50 years, 50, 60 years
in
America.
Like the Peter Zenger trial back in colonial America. We're going to see just how much the court system today recognizes and enforces the First Amendment that we were led to believe was the law of the land when you and I went to school, James.
Well, I tell you, it certainly we've certainly moved a long way since then, but this is a big one. And if freedom of speech doesn't protect dissidents, then you've got no freedom of speech, and we'll see. But that's where we stand with jury selection. And again, it was an ideologically and racially diverse jury that was ultimately selected. You do need a unanimous jury to hand out these things. I got to go back to the Heafy report, though. Timothy Heafy, who was hired, the investigator hired by the city of Charlottesville, who came to the conclusion that the violence that day, there would have not been violence had the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter and the protesters not shown up. He is a former federal prosecutor. So this isn't just some schlub that somebody randomly picked or some random blogger picked to go and give a report. This was a former federal prosecutor picked by, selected by the city of Charlottesville. And I probably can guess that the city of Charlottesville didn't know what to do with that report when it came in because he maintained his honor and he gave an accurate accounting. And we'll see how heavily that weighs in the trial and how much it weighs on the jury, his findings, as this thing continues to play itself out.
Well, I doubt that the jury will see that report.
Oh, I guarantee you they'll see it.
And, well, let's try, you can try to use it. Now, what you may be able to get it in through having Timothy Heafy testify as
the city of Charlottesville own investigator. I think that if anything's going to be admissible, it's got to be that.
Well, let's sit back and see. I can tell you in criminal cases, I had a criminal case I told you which basically changed my viewpoint. I never wanted to handle a serious felony after that. I had a client who had to take his child, his infant child, to the emergency room twice to have his stomach pumped out because a sister of his wife had left drugs on the table, on the coffee table, and had ingested them. And the judge wouldn't let me get that evidence into trial. And that evidence would have been all that it took to turn this man into a free man. So this is, you know, don't have rose-colored glasses on about this. That Healy report needs to go in front of the jury, but the big question is, will the judge let it?
We're going to talk about the judge in the next hour. We're going to talk about a whole lot more in the next hour. And I think over the course of the next month, by the way, I think, again, this is one of the biggest cases in the last 50, 60 years in American history. I don't think that's hyperbole. I don't think that's exaggeration. We're going to talk about this extensively over the course of the next month on this program. But I would remind you again that the Unite the Right demonstrators had the right to be there. The opposition did not. The Constitution protects what the Unite the Right demonstrators were doing. It does not protect the heckler's veto. What can you tell us about a heckler's veto, Keith?
Well, a heckler's veto is if one person complains. It's like, for example, Madeleine Murray O'Hare's atheist-inspired lawsuits that she brought before the Supreme Court in the late 50s, early 60s. She was the ultimate heckler, the one person in the whole community that objected, for example, to saying the Lord's Prayer or saying the Pledge of Allegiance and things like this. And she got her way. Now, she, of course, was a leftist. Will a right-winger who objects to the government have that same type of right? I doubt it.
Well, I think what we're talking about here in this case is, of course, the heckler's veto of a mob coming down and being able, because they are visiting violence and threats and visiting sheer numbers against the people who were rightfully permitted to be there. Your mob doesn't have the right to subdue the rights of these people.
This
That's
is
a
not a one
veto.
Person. This is a what we've got here is a little ivy-covered North Korea called Charlottesville, Virginia. If this had been a normal southern town like Shelbyville, Tennessee, or something like this, the police would have kept the two groups apart, and there would have been no problem, no riot, no violence. This was orchestrated and was done with the consent and collusion of the authorities in Charlottesville.
I'm glad you brought that up. I would like to, come back at the top of the next segment and speak to that point. Much more to come in the next segment and in the next hour as well, as this Charlottesville case is underway.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government, and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Jump up, get it. Hey.
Devil with a blue dress, devil with a blue dress on.
Looking mighty now, here she come. Wearing a wig, hat, and shades to match. Got her high-heeled shoes and an alligator hat. Wearing a pearl and a diamond ring. Got braids, it's gonna sing a night and everything.
Devil with a blue dress on.
She's a devil with a blue dress on. Oh.
going back to Charlottesville, we will. And, wow, so much to cover. Still so much to cover. Let me say this very quickly. I got to say this because I don't want to forget. And I've already put it off too long. If you want to listen to the Charlottesville trial, it begins every weekday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. They take a little recess for lunch, and then it continues in the afternoon. If you dial in and they're not in session, you'll hear dead air. If you dial in and they are, you will hear it as if you are in the courtroom with your eyes closed. It's that clear. The number is 888-808-6929. Again, that is 888-808-6929. And then you'll be asked to give an access code. Your access code is 433-4643. Now, if that's too many numbers to remember, all you got to do is go to my Twitter at James Edwards TPC. Scroll down a little bit. You'll find it. Jason Kessler's Twitter feed or thepoliticalcesspool.org. There's an article entitled The Charlottesville Trial Begins. Scroll down to the bottom of the article. You'll see that information there, along with the way for you to anonymously contribute to the defense fund of the Unite the Right participants. So that's all there at that website. We would ask you to do so. When Jason Kessler and Sam Dixon appeared in tandem back around the 4th of July, I know we were able to raise some money for them, and it was money well spent, and we're happy to do it. So that's how you can listen to the trial. Now,
let me say something before you get right into it. Okay. You need to remember that this is a very simple case. There would have been no violence if the authorities in Charlottesville, the left-wing Jewish mayor, Peter Singer, and the left-wing black police chief had done their jobs.
And the vice mayor, Wes Bellamy, who was by all accounts everything. You want to talk about projection. He was everything that they pretend that some of these defendants were. I mean, he was an outright white-hating zealot.
Well, read his tweets, read his Facebook things. There's no question that he was trying to stoke the fires in this. If the authorities in the city of Charlottesville had done what honest, honorable men would have done, as was done several weeks later at Shelbyville, Tennessee, they would have kept Antifa separated from the right-wing demonstrators who were doing exactly what the law prescribed. They had gotten permits. They were there for a limited purpose. They were not there to provoke violence. They had violence visited upon them. They were basically funneled through a kill box to the Lee statue, and then once they got there, they were told they had to disperse, and the only way to go out was right back out through the one entrance through there where they were violently set upon by Antifa. This was all planned. This was all condoned. This was all at the behest of the authorities of Charlottesville. And because of that, these people...
And the state of Virginia. Terry McAuliffe, by the way, who's in a governor's race right now mention.
Yeah, Terry McAuliffe, as the governor of Virginia, also had a hand in this. But the only violence that they did, that these defendants and other people did, was in self-defense as they were being beset upon by the left wing.
Look, I want to say this, and we got to be fair, as we are here on this radio program. Out of the thousands of people who attended the Unite the Right rally, I can't tell you. In fact, I would be surprised if not a handful of them went there with bad intentions, went there to cause damage and destruction. We don't know the thousands of people who were there, but I can tell you of the people that I do know who were there, they were stand-up guys. And I can tell you that the event organizers, especially, had no intentions of this being a violent rally. They didn't go there to cause violence. We're going to get into some of the so-called evidence that the plaintiff's attorneys are presenting in the next hour. We're going to really get deep into this in the next hour, ladies and gentlemen. So stay tuned. Let us paint a clear picture. But out of what, 5,000 people, however many people were there, I'm sure there were some people there who went there to.
But then let me ask you this, James. Out of the named defendants in this
none
of them.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to pretend that, hey, everybody there was a saint. Everybody, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if a couple of anonymous people that nobody knows about
they are being sued. The people that are being sued are the so-called leaders.
That's right.
And the leaders were not guilty of any of the tortious activities that they are being charged.
Now, if you got a guy in the Unite the Right contingent who was guilty of this, and you got a video, you got evidence of him swinging,
he's not a defendant in this case.
That's right. That's a good point. Well, James Fields is one of the co-defendants, and I guess that's a different story.
Well, he was ambushed.
Well,
basically.
We, you know, anyway, we'll leave that alone. But here again, some of these headlines. I mentioned the Washington Post. And by the way, these media entities, they write this stuff for each other. BuzzFeed writes articles to impress the Washington Post. Washington Post writes articles to impress the New York Times. They're speaking to each other. The vast majority of America has tuned out. But I mentioned white supremacists returned to Charlottesville, but this time they're on trial. That's a headline. Well, who says the white supremacists? I mean, they're not. The white people who don't hate themselves, and if that's the modern day definition
white
of white people,
with a sense of racial solidarity,
then that okay. But if white people obtain a legal permit backed by a judge in hopes of exercising their freedoms of speech and assembly at a public park, which they're allowed to do in this country, I guess the precedent here is that they can now expect to be physically attacked and then blamed for the violence and sued for good measure.
Well,
that's the lesson. But here's NPR.
Here's what it comes down to: you are not allowed to do that. If you're there's a heads you win, tails I lose situation going on here. If you're a right winger, you do not have the right that you just announced.
Well, apparently. I mean, that's what's at stake here. That's the precedent. And what's a right winger? I mean, these people are patriots. These people are mostly, you know, Trump got it wrong. There wasn't good people on both sides. It was mostly good people on our side and very few good people on the other side. NPR, hate on trial in Virginia. That's the headline. I mean, how objective is that? The cold, hard facts of the case completely exonerate the defendants. The investigative report, I keep bringing this up, sanctioned by the city of Charlottesville itself exonerates the defendants. But the regime media is putting the production of these headlines like this, hate on trial in Virginia, into overdrive. And they will remain in overdrive over the course of the next month to remind the jurors of the decision that they're being pressured to make. Now, if the plaintiff's attorney, go Keith, I got to say something.
I'm just going to say the Healy report is not being published by NPR or MSNBC or CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, any of these alphabet soup organizations, not by the Washington Post, not by the New York Times, but it's there. And believe me, the truth is there, and the truth was commissioned and paid for by the leftist government of Charlottesville, and they have basically blithely ignored it because it doesn't fit their narrative. We're not getting all the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this news reporting for sure, and it remains to be seen whether we will in this trial.
I think the timing of this is interesting for this reason. Had it not been for COVID, perhaps this would have gone to trial sooner. I don't know. I mean, 4 years sounds like an awfully long time.
Unfortunately, it's not an awfully long time in today's
Well, but here's the point, though. But since Unite the Right, from that day until this week when the trial actually began, you've had the complete destruction of full cities by Black Lives Matter terrorists and Antifa terrorists. You've had the riots of the year of George Floyd. You've had all of that these people in Western Virginia, where this case is being tried, have seen. And so I wonder, you've seen all this stuff about the mostly peaceful protests while police stations are being sacked, and then you compare that to Charlottesville, and Charlottesville looks like an absolute picnic compared to the most benign Black Lives Matter riot. And so you have a system that is polarizing, and I wonder if the extra time that it's taken to get to this trial and the way that some of these jurors inevitably have marinated in what they've seen, if that's going to play a role in that. By the way, you have not one, not two, but three trials that are beginning almost simultaneously. That is, of course, the Charlottesville trial, which we've been talking about all hour, which we will continue to talk about in greater depth with greater insights from the courtroom itself in the next hour. But also in recent days, the Ahmaud Arbery trial in Georgia has started. And the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, which the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial said you can refer to the people that he shot as looters or arsonists, but not as victims. So I don't know, Keith. I mean, as much as these zealots that would like to prosecute these defendants because they hate them, and I think that is the primary motivation here, is that they hate them. If the plaintiff's attorneys truly were out for what was best for the plaintiffs, they would have done what was sensible and sue the city of Charlottesville. That way they could have actually gotten money. I do believe that some of these plaintiffs were probably injured, okay? It was a melee. I mean, people get hurt in a melee. Yes, the left has started it, but there could have been some innocent bystander. I don't know the backstory of all these plaintiffs. There's about a dozen of them. But some of them probably were injured. But it's the city of Charlottesville at fault there for that. The police have to maintain law and order. The police did not. The police, we know. I have watched hours
they
upon
totally
hours of video. We know what happened. But the plaintiff's attorneys are more concerned, it would appear, at sticking it to the people that they hate than doing what was best for their plaintiffs, which would be suing the city of Charlottesville. So we've got that. We've got the Kyle Rittenhouse. We've got the Ahmaud Arbery. All these cases taking place now after what we've seen from Black Lives Matter and Antifa last year. It's going to be interesting to see if that weighs on the jury a little more heavily than the system media propaganda will. We'll be back to talk about this more in the next hour and for the next month as well. This thing is supposed to scheduled to wrap up before Thanksgiving. That's another thing that'll be interesting to see if it happens. We'll stay tuned. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.